So if you're still working on that homework, which, yeah, sure, you may be, right? You've got a whole day, right? You probably didn't do it over the weekend. Yeah, maybe you did. In any case, you can come to my office after class pretty much any time until I go to my 6 o'clock statistics class later today. You can see Jacinto too, right? And I know you help each other. All right, so if you have any questions regarding this stuff, good day to ask. Did anybody have any questions they wanted to ask me now? Okay, maybe not ready to ask me a question yet. Okay, so remember Thursday, we talked about these things. All right, we have some function of position, like maybe it's a density function for some wire or something, and we multiply that by the arc length of a little segment. So here's some little segment, right? It's got this little arc length ds. Multiply f at that position by the arc length ds, right? So maybe there's the origin. There's my little position vector pointing right into my segment. I plug into my function. I get f of position. I multiply by my arc length ds. Then I have to add it all up over an integral, right? Which takes the limit of really, really small segments ds. Now we're doing a little different game. So instead of just a curve, it's an oriented curve. So we'll have to talk about the distinction. So in pictures, an oriented curve has a sense of this way is forward, this way is backward. Okay. And usually this is very natural because you probably have parameterized your curve, right? So you parameterize it so that your parameter t or whatever is increasing as you move in the forward direction. So if we have a parameterized curve, then at any point we can have a little unit tangent vector, right? And we know which way it points. It points in the forward direction, tangent to the curve. Remember those unit tangent vectors? They have magnitude 1 by definition. So if you know which way it points, and you know the magnitude is 1, you know the vector. So if you have a parameterization, this is fine. Now the funny thing is, we're not really going to work with the unit tangent vectors much directly. Unit tangent vector times ds will simplify to something else, and that's what we'll really use in computations. And then here, the reason we call it a vector line integral is because now we're not thinking about the integral of just any old function of position. Now we're thinking of the integral of, in space, three functions of position. It's a vector field. So at each point now, there's some vector. Maybe it points off like this. And at different points, the vector will be different, right? We talked about vector fields Tuesday and Wednesday last week. Okay. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the dot product. And why would we take the dot product? Why not the cross product? Well, I mean, you could take the cross product. You could do all sorts of stuff. You could take the integral of adding them if you wanted to, but the dot product is the most natural thing to do. It has a motivation in physics. If you take the dot product of this vector here, and this happens to be a force vector, so this is a force field, and we do the dot product, then we're computing work done. So it has a physics motivation. It also will have some very nice applications to geometry. Like maybe you have a funny parametric curve. You want to find the area inside that curve.
only knowing the parameterization of the boundary of your curve. You want, how can you find the area inside?
You can do stuff like that, but it's always going to involve a kind of dot product thing.
So this will require some convincing, right? We're going to have to see some examples of why the dot product is actually worthy of our attention here. Right? Why should we be doing this kind of dot product? But we'll get some examples. And again, you don't have to actually use the unit tangent vector in computations. So this is actually easier than it looks.
It has a little ds in there.
Okay. So let's try and start to clarify this with some examples. Hopefully answer some questions. So here we are with vector line integral. Okay. First thing is, again, I don't want to have to deal with unit tangent vectors. Okay, so let's remember some stuff here. How do we actually get this, right? We usually have a parametric curve, right? Now, a parametric curve has an orientation baked in. You increase the parameter t, right? And that's the forward direction, right? So that's how we know which way is forward. If you're not given a parameterization, somebody has to tell you the orientation some other way. Like maybe they tell you, oh, this is a clockwise circle or something like that. You know, they have to tell you the orientation somehow. Or the curve is going up and to the right, whatever. Okay, so how do we get this? So remember, we take the derivative, right? And that gives us a vector pointing tangent to the curve, but then we make it magnitude 1. In terms of physics, you think of this as the velocity vector divided by the speed, which is the magnitude of the velocity vector. And ds, right, that little arc length differential, well, that is supposed to be a tiny number, right? It's an approximation. It's actually a straight line approximation of your curve. Where you say, okay, over a very short segment, we pretend that the speed is actually constant, even though it might not be. We actually also pretend the direction is constant. So we pretend the velocity is constant. We pretend for a very short time interval, dt, we are moving in a straight line. And so we just do speed times time to get distance. Right? So that gives us our little tiny arc length approximation. And when you put these together, and then things simplify, right? The speed here and here cancels out. And we also have a name for this, r prime times dt, so this is time derivative of r. By definition, this is just what we mean by the differential of position, or displacement, right? A little tiny change, right? So in general, you imagine, okay, here's your curve thing, and okay, here we are at time t, and then, you know, here we are at some later time. Short time later, right? Now I'm going to exaggerate things, you know, make the approximation look bad, but oh well. So I mean, this would be the actual change in position, the true displacement. Right, because you imagine maybe the origin's up here, right? So you have a position arrow here. And then you have a later position arrow here. And so we subtract them, subtract the two position arrows, and get an arrow from earlier to later.
if we do the subtraction this way. Later minus earlier is an arrow from earlier to later.
Now the dr,
I'm reminding you of something we did back in chapter 3. Okay, so this is not new. I think it was a little review here, right? Go back to the board photos for that. We actually did a homework problem, in fact, where I asked you to find some drs for some curves and some tiny dt's, right? So the dr is where you go tangent to the curve at the current time and just follow that at the current speed, the earlier speed here, right? Speed at times t and direction at time t. And how far do you go? Well, just speed times tiny time dt, right? Now, in the limit as dt goes to 0, right, these get really close together, right? They become really good. But if I make them really good, then you can't tell the difference, right? If they're really close together. So I exaggerate the difference. Okay. Okay. So we have a little tiny change in position. So all this TDS stuff is conceptually it's a way of thinking about it. Computationally, it's better to work directly with this concept. Okay. So think of it as your field dot a little displacement. So we're going to go along, and we imagine now there's some vector field out there, right? So maybe the field points, this way here, right? At some later time, it'll point some other way. Maybe it points here now, right? The field could be changing. And we could keep going along. Here it could be, we could compute more stuff, right? So you can imagine a whole bunch of little DRs. The arrows will be shorter or longer depending on how fast we're moving along the curve, and that depends on your parameterization. Although it doesn't change, it won't change the integral. It'll just change how long it takes to go along the path. So we imagine a bunch of these little DRs. If you're going fast, you'll need, you won't need as many DRs to add up to a whole curve, right? But if you're going slow, you'll need more. Right? So we imagine some DRs that roughly cover the curve. But my diagram is getting crowded. Okay. Really good. Okay. And we have a bunch of vector fields. There's the vector fields that maybe are doing their own thing, but here they are. And at every point that we sample, we're taking that dot product. One way you can think about this is it's the magnitude of the vector field. In physics, you think of this as a force times the magnitude of your displacement times the cosine of the angle between them. Now, as you can see here, that angle theta is going to be different in general depending on where you are. It's not always going to be the same angle. So since in general they can all change with position, we can't just do one big multiplication problem, right? If we were moving in a straight line, then yeah, and then maybe.
But even then, not necessarily, because maybe the vector field is changing direction all the time. But if you had a constant vector field, so all the arrows were always pointing the same way with the same magnitude, all the red arrows were the same, and you went along a straight line, then yeah, you could just multiply force times displacement, times the magnitude of displacement, so times distance, times the cosine of this angle. Another way to think of it is as the magnitude of the part of F parallel, well, really plus or minus, right? Because the cosine could go negative, right? See the little picture of that. Here's a dr. Here's some f. Right? We could drop down and just take the parallel part of it right there, the part parallel to your displacement. And in this case, because the angle is less than 90 degrees, this works out to be positive, right? It's a positive dot product when the angle is less than 90 degrees. If I draw another picture, this, then it's a different story. Now the parallel part is really an anti-parallel part, right? And the dot product is going to be negative, and it'll be the negative of the magnitude of that parallel part. Okay, so that's a little bit of review of chapter 2 stuff, right? That all this stuff is coming back to be useful. Questions or comments? Several different ways to think about it. So sometimes, depending on which way you think about it, you might see a shortcut or you might not, right? If you know something about the angles, or you know that something is parallel or perpendicular to something else, you can take advantage of that and use it as a shortcut. Whereas if all you had was just the bare dot product formula, and you didn't have this kind of geometric picture, such shortcuts will not be clear to you at all. I mean, you'll have to actually work through the dot product. And then you'll be like, huh, this came out zero a lot. Why is that? Right? The answer is probably in some geometry. Vector field you all picked last time? X plus Y, X minus Y? Let's do a 2D one for starters. Okay. This all works in any number of dimensions equally well, because the dot product is defined in all number of dimensions, right? Let's start with a 2D. Think of it as something like that. It's either, I forget which one was plus, which one was minus, but it was something like that. First day we looked at vector fields, that was Tuesday last week, right? Okay. So this was some funny vector field. And now let's say I ask you to compute the following. I'm going to write this, and I'll explain what it means. So we're going to have, say we start at the origin, and then part one there will be part one of a curve that takes us up to here, to maybe 0, 4. Okay. And then part two will take us out here to
7-4. And then the other thing, I'll ask you to compute the straight line integral. Okay. Let's see how this would play out. Okay, so the physical interpretation would be one is the work done by force F on object following path 1, 2. So 1 + 2 means 1, then 2. Right? I guess I need that. So two straight line paths. Two is the work done by a force F on object following path 3. It could be any object, right? We're just going to have to assume, though, that this is the right formula for the force. So if you're very clever with, say, setting up electrical fields, you know, playing around with some wires and batteries and magnets, you could probably get something, you know, as a halfway decent approximation to this force field in a small region. So it's not entirely outside the realm of experimental applicability. You can make up simple stuff like this, but of course, in general, though, if you have some arrangement of wires and magnets and batteries, the exact formula for the electromagnetic fields, so the forces they have, will be rather complicated. So I'm just making up a simple one here. Okay, so let's start on the computation of 1. So, 1. Okay, so I'll show you kind of the naive way to do it, you know, is kind of you would parameterize it, okay? So we would have some parametric curve. So x is always 0, right? Along path 1. Okay? So we do the first integral. And then y is going up from 0 to 4, right? So how about y equals t, and then t goes from 0 to 4. So increasing t is our orientation. That would give us the vertical line. Okay? And so then we'd have to do the integral for 1. So how does that play out? Let's see here. For 1... So t is going to go from 0 to 4. We're going to have the integral of, now here, plug in f. So x plus y is 0 plus t. X minus y is 0 minus t. Right. Just plug into your parameterization. Okay, now we need a dot product. Okay. Well, let's see. Okay, so dr, remember this. This is the time derivative, your velocity, times dt. Tiny displacement equals current speed or current velocity times tiny time increment. Okay. So we need to take the time derivatives of both parts. Okay, the time derivative of 0 is 0, right? And the time derivative of t is 1. And then there's our dt. So that's the core setup. If you have a parameterization, you have a formula for the force. You plug in the parameterization. T
to the force or to the field equation, and then you take derivatives here. So that's the core setup. Any questions about this? So if you get this far, then it should be pretty easy. Right? If you got the parameterization, and then you can use the parameterization to turn this abstract-looking integral into a regular calculus 1 integral, right, then it's not so bad. Right? Just take the dot product. Okay, 0 plus t times 0, nothing. 0 minus t times 1, negative t. Okay? Not bad at all. So I can do that integral. It's negative t squared over 2, right? Plug in 0 and 4. Okay, 4 squared is 16, divided by 2 is 8. Plug in 0, get nothing. I'm going to say it's negative 8. Okay. So that we physically, that would say the vertical part of our path did, the force did negative work on that vertical part. Does that make sense? Well, negative work would mean angles bigger than 90 degrees between our little displacement arrows and our force arrows, right? This kind of setup. So here there's an angle bigger than 90 degrees, right? So let's see if that's really happening, right? What would, if we plug in x equals 0 here, we get y comma negative y. So we got a positive horizontal and a negative vertical. And the horizontal and vertical get bigger as y gets bigger. So we have this kind of a picture for f, like this. That's what f looks like there. You plug in x equals 0, plug in y's that are going from 0 to more and more positive. So you get a bigger and bigger positive horizontal part and a bigger and bigger negative vertical part. And so if you imagine a little dr along your vertical path here, right, and right there, that angle theta is going to be 135 degrees exactly. So the cosine is negative, the dot product is negative. Intuitively, the force is pushing kind of downward, right? A slanted downward force. And we moved up against the force. So the force did negative work on us. In terms of energy, it took away some of our kinetic energy. So a negative 8 makes sense here. We're going against the force. And then we have to compute the other half of it, right? Going along too. Okay. Any questions about the first vertical line integral there? Okay. So we just need to pick a parameterization for 2. Not so bad, right? We're just going to have y be stuck at 4, right? That was clear. It's horizontal. And then x is going from 0 to 7. So how about we just have x be t, and t will increase from 0 to 7. That'll do it. Okay. now t goes from 0 to 7.
This is a different parameterization. We reset the clock. Now we're going to start at time equals 0 up here again, and then go up to time 7. Okay, so this is a parameterization for the second part. So time goes from 0 to 7. Now let's see here. X plus y will be t plus 4 now, right? Because x is t and y is 4. And x minus y will be t minus 4. Okay. And now we have to take the time derivatives, right? Okay, so take the derivative of t, because that's what x is. Okay. So the derivative of x, which is t, well, that's just 1, right? And then the derivative of y with respect to time is the derivative of 4. 4 is a constant, so that's a 0. And there's a little dt. So what's the story? From 0 to 7 now, take the dot product. You get t plus 4 dt. Do an antiderivative. Plug in 0 and 7, take the difference. Something like that. So very similar to the first one, same process, plug in your parameterization into the formula for the field, multiply by the time derivative of your position vector, right? So that's just, you're taking derivatives of the components of your parameterization. And then multiply by dt, dot product, integrate from start to end of the path. Questions or comments about this one? You'll notice it came out positive.
Well, that's because now we're going to the right, and that's going with the force, right? What is the force now along this curve? Is it? We have y is stuck at 4. So you have this thing, x is going at 0, right?
X plus 4, X plus y is 0 plus 4, which is 4.
And then, and by the time you're over here, x plus y is 7 plus 4, it's 11, so it's even more positive. And then what about that x minus y?
Okay, well, y is stuck at 4, so the vertical part here, when x is 0 and y is 4, 0 minus 4 is negative 4, like I've got there. By the time I'm over here, what's happening? Then we'll have 7 minus 4, so a vertical part of positive 3. So if we put that in the picture, it looks something like this. We'll get more and more horizontal, but the vertical is going to switch signs on us. Something like this. So stronger and stronger force as we go out that way. The vertical changed from negative to positive, but we were going on a positive horizontal trajectory, and we had a positive horizontal part of the force. So the dot product was always positive. The force was always helping us. It would, in physics terms, it would be giving us kinetic energy, not taking away kinetic energy. And if you're not sure about how I got these arrows, just imagine a point. Like imagine this is the point, 5, 4, or whatever, 6, 4, right? 6, 4.
6 for x, 4 for y, whatever, and plug it in here and see what error you get. All I'm doing. So it makes sense for this to come out positive, right? The angles, those thetas, between displacements along this horizontal path and the force, the field, the vector field, they're all angles that are less than 90 degrees. So positive dot product, in physics terms, positive work. We've got a precise value of that positive work. If I did my arithmetic right, 52.25, right? Okay, so to finally answer question one, just add up, in physics terms, the work done over each of the two parts of the path. Okay. So we're going to have the negative 8 plus 52.5, I think. Yeah, I can go there. Okay. So 44.5. Some negative work on the first part, but a lot more positive work on the second part. Now the other question, right, was what happens if we take the straight line? Okay. So we would need a parameterization of that slanted line. So now x and y are both changing, so the parameterization is not quite as trivial. Anybody have an idea or a suggestion for a parameterization that will get me from 0, 0 to 7, 4? In a straight line? Why does that work? Oh, and what's the range of t?
0 to 7.
0 to 7, yeah. Okay, why does that work? I mean, how'd you come up with that? So that's an equation between just x and y.
Yes. Once you've made that choice, then you have y as a function of x, so basically we're using x as our parameter. Okay. So I have a friendly amendment to your proposal. Why bring in t at all? Why even bother to change the letters? Let's just have x itself be the parameter.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, so let's see here. Okay, so x goes from 0 to 7. And now we have the dot product of the field times the time derivatives. Well, now x derivatives. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So it's going to be x plus 4/7 x, and then x minus 4/7 x. Dot. Okay. Now I have to take derivatives. So the derivative of x with respect to x is 1. Now take the derivative of y, 4/7. Then instead of dt, it's just a dx. And what are you going to get? Okay, 1 plus 4/7 is 11/7 x. So 11/7 x times 1. And then negative 3/7 x times 4/7. Okay. 11/7 minus, what was that? 12/29? Mm. No, 12/49. Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Well, it is what it is.
Okay.
Let's see.
Let's see. The x dx part will just give me 7 squared over 2. So, okay, maybe I can do it without the calculator. I'm not totally doing it with horrible arithmetic mistakes. Because you can factor out that nasty fraction constant. And then I think some stuff cancels. But still. What is that? 77 over 2.
I got this right.
Minus 6. I'm not entirely confident I have that right. Seventh minus 4/7, that's positive 3/7, so it's a plus. Okay, my calculator confirms it. 44.5.
Okay. Okay, so the interesting thing is that they came out the same. That's actually not a coincidence. The reason they came out the same will get explained in future classes, but the reason it boils down to the fact that that vector field is a gradient. It passes the cross partials test. And we'll talk about that more in future classes, but there's a reason these came out the same. They don't have to come out the same. But the fact that we had the same start and end points, and the fact that that's a gradient, actually made them come out the same. And so it's actually possible when you know that you have a gradient, there's a huge shortcut in that you can basically, if you know what it's a gradient of, you can just look at the values of that function at the endpoints.
Okay.
So, not so again, we'll see some stuff where there can be good vector fields and bad vector fields. In some sense, good vector fields are gradients. The good vector fields, only the endpoints matter, but the bad vector fields, the path matters. So let's see. Yeah, there's two or three minutes left, so I'll give you some problems to let you explore more of that. And we'll get more into what I'm saying about gradients and good and bad vector fields next time. I guess my one comment on I don't know if I have time. For the first problem here, I want to say that if we use a little bit of geometric thinking, you can maybe instead of having to deal with the explicit dot products and parameterizations for part one, you could have a little shortcut like this. So you could have, say, on the vertical part, dx is, x is not changing, right? So dx is equal to zero. So that integral would just be this integral. X is stuck at zero. So you're just integrating from y equals zero to y equals four. When you take the dot product with these things, the horizontal part is zero. So all that really mattered was the x minus y. So see here how we got the negative t dt, right? I could have written it this way. If you like, think of that as me parameterizing it by y. And in the second part, we had y equals 4. And dy equals then 0, right? Y is not changing on the horizontal part. So I could have written it as x goes from 0 to x goes to 7. And now all that matters is the horizontal part, because I'll be taking a dot product of a vertical part of displacement that's 0. So it would be x plus 4dx. So didn't have time to really go into that, but there are shortcuts. Okay. But I'm running out of time, so how about I will email the homework and I'll put it in the board photos. That way you don't have to wait for me to write it now. You're probably still working on the older stuff.
Right, that's due tomorrow.
Okay.